Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's still kind of weird getting used to this music on a Sunday morning, but you're not wearing the Odd Couple shirt, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm wearing my Kojak shirt today. Who loves you, baby?
Who loves you, baby? Well, I always have to ask that question because half the time I don't know who loves me and who hates me. Good morning, Tom Lavero. How are you?
All right, Russell. Good morning to you. Happy Sunday morning.
Yes.
I always used to say with... We on Saturday mornings we present cartoons. On Sunday mornings we give a sermon.
There you go. There you go. We're going to give a 3-hour sermon.
Yes,
how about
yes,
that?
We are.
And there'll be a couple of sermons later on today in Cooperstown. We're going to talk about the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's always an emotional day. It's always a cool day. I have never ever been there.
I've been to
so
three. It's interesting. In 92, I went to. The Football Hall of Fame and the Baseball Hall of Fame were like on a Saturday and a Sunday, the same weekend.
You went same weekend?
I went to cover John Riggins' induction in Canton on a Saturday and then drove to Cooperstown on Sunday to watch Tom Seaver's induction.
Wow.
Okay, because I had to be there for Seaver's induction.
Absolutely. And that's such a sad thing that's going on with him, but
yeah. So that was my first one, and then
that's not a short drive.
No,
either,
no, that's
from Canton to Cooperstown. That's about 8 hours.
That's
right?
That's a haul.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a haul. But I'm Superman. Bullets bounce off me.
That's
baby.
Good by you. What
Absolutely.
Were you like 30 something at that point? No, 40.
I was 92. I was 38.
Okay, so late 30s. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And then
so you still had a little. I
still have a little.
I didn't mean you don't have any juice in the tank. I mean, like at 38, our bodies, our minds, we recover faster.
Russell, I'm better than ever. I don't know what your story is.
He's like Mike Greenberg over here, back and better than ever.
Yeah, I'm better than ever. And then, I covered Cal Ripken's. I covered Eddie Murray's induction.
Okay.
I covered Cal Ripken's induction. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Because that was the first time I went to the Hall of Fame gala that they have in the hall the night before.
Mm, okay.
And, you're basically
for Cal's
at a party.
Induction.
Yeah,
okay.
with all these Hall of Famers. And the two things I remember was I met Richard Gere, and he's really small compared to what I thought he would be in the movies. And Don Sutton was convinced that there are ghosts of baseball players that walk around the Hall of Fame. He was seriously convinced about it. That was a little bit strange. But then Cal was the record crowd. Cal and Tony Gwynn, 70,000. That could be broken today, although it's going to be really hot with Mariano Rivera going in. It'll be like a Yankees Woodstock, and I guarantee it will be broken next year when Derek Jeter walks to the Hall of Fame.
Sure.
That will likely be the biggest crowd ever. I got a few things I want to get to before we start the Hall of Fame discussion.
Absolutely.
And first of all, let's mention that the Washington Nationals did exactly what they needed to do last night with a 5-3 win, bouncing off that devastating loss Friday night where Dave Martinez was basically exposed naked for his poor bullpen management in that particular game, and there was no defense of it. And then they turn around and win an important game against the Braves where everything works for them last night.
Well, I wanted to start with this. If he was exposed badly on Friday night, and there's no question that he was, Tommy, He was ultra aggressive, yeah. and maybe countered that exposure. Not that Snicker did a bad job. I'm not saying that. But he basically said he treated last night's game as not only a must-win game, but essentially a playoff game.
Yes, yes, he did.
If you look at what he got, what he needed, five outs from Doolittle, two innings from Suero, one key out, granted, a leadoff single by Fernando Rodney, who had pitched so poorly and so much the night before.
He hit 97 at one point.
I know, to get that strikeout after the leadoff hit in the eighth inning. Incredible.
I hope they don't test them anytime soon.
Well, I mean that's a whole nother issue, but you know, like, look, we would be unfair to Davey Martinez if we didn't say he was absolutely a butcher on Friday night.
Yes,
and Tommy, and just in my opinion, I didn't get to see the game. I listened to most of the entire game because I was driving from Kingdom Come back to Chantilly.
Right.
So I got to listen to Jags and Charlie Slows down in Richmond on the Richmond Nationals Radio Network affiliate. And then obviously when I got closer to D.C. Here on the Fan. And every move he made from grinding out five innings with Anibal Sanchez, who wins his sixth consecutive start, even though, again, he was far from great, but he gave them a workmanlike effort, I guess, and lowers his ERA to 3.80. But Suero for two, again, Rodney bringing him back after the poor performance. And Davey Martinez had said on Friday night that Rodney told him right after the game he'd be good to go.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, that's crazy when that workload, when he can't find the strike zone, to think that he would be back in that game in a pretty high leverage spot last night, Tom. The offense gave them enough. Some key base hits. And again, Dr. Doolittle with a five-out save. Now, I mean, just in my mind, jumping ahead, PJ just mentioned Joe Ross is going to go.
Oh, they got some issues today.
Yeah. I mean, you better need about 13 runs tonight.
If they win tonight, it's a gift.
Yes.
Because they've got bullpen issues. Yes. They've got starting pitching issues. I mean, at the very least, what they managed to do last night was not to sink further.
Right.
I mean, if they wind up losing tonight, they'll split the series.
Yep.
They won't be any worse off than when they walked into Atlanta.
Correct. But I think it'll be 6.5 after tonight, if memory serves me correct. I'll double check that. But to your point, 2-2, and they still have the series lead, if you will, at that point, because they won the two games in I always want to call it Turner Field, SunTrust Park in May. Then the Braves took 2 out of 3 at Nationals Park soon after that, and then you'd split this four game set, and then the Braves are here not tomorrow, Tuesday, but next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday for a key three game set after the Colorado Rockies come in for four, and then the Dodgers come in. Huge homestand, obviously, straight ahead. But tonight, you don't want to say like you're chalking it up to an L, because Kevin Gausman, who is expected to start for the Braves,
he's got his own issues.
Yeah, the Nationals. Yeah. I think the last. I think that Tuesday night game in SunTrust Park again, that two game sweep. I'll double check this, but I think he gave up like 8 runs or whatever to the Nationals.
Yeah, the Braves aren't exactly strong going into the game tonight too, which is a nationally broadcast game. On ESPN Sunday Night Baseball. You know, I wanted to mention two things. We used to do the birthdays here on this show. We don't do it anymore, but I wanted to mention two birthdays. One of which is on Thursday. It was Screamin' Jay Hawkins' birthday. Screamin' Jay Hawkins is one of the great rhythm and blues singers of the 50s and the 60s. He's no longer with us, but he was very memorable. We're going to play a couple of Screamin' Jay Hawkins tunes sometime during the show that I'm sure you've heard at some point or another. And today is Ernest Hemingway's birthday.
Oh,
the great American author. And I have a Hemingway-like story, if I could share with you.
Of course.
I went to Cuba in 1999 with the Orioles team when they played the Cuban national team.
You have had so many like cool road trip experiences.
Oh, the Cuba trip was the best. I spent a month in Sydney for the 2000 Olympics.
Right.
But that is not as good as the 5 days I spent in Cuba.
Because you were telling me that story last Sunday. Yeah. So the Cuba trip?
Oh, it was better.
Tops?
It was like going back in time. It was like being inside of a novel. But one of the things I did in Cuba was there's this small fishing village outside of Havana called Cohimar, where Hemingway used to live and keep his fishing boat. And that's where his boat captain lived. His boat captain was Gregorio Fuentes. And in 1999, he was still alive. And he was 103 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
And I found him. I went to his house. And through his grandson, did an interview with him. And his grandson charged me $1 a minute to interview him. So I interviewed. And Gregorio Fuentes, his significance is in the book, The Old Man and the Sea, he is both the little boy that is used in the book because Hemingway used the stories that Gregorio had told him about being a little boy. And
that?
He's also the old man in the book, too.
Okay.
So he's basically the model for that whole book. And I sat down and interviewed him for about 20 minutes
How about that?
In 1999. So I didn't know Ernest Hemingway, who obviously, unfortunately, took his own life in 1961. But I got to meet his ship captain.
And he was 103
when I interviewed him.
And when did he pass?
I think a few years later.
Huh.
Smoked cigars his whole life, too, I might want to point out.
I mean, that's probably what you should do in Havana, right? Or outside of Havana?
Yes.
I mean, I could go for a good cigar right now. I can go for a lot of things right now, Tommy.
So we're gonna get to the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
For a couple of segments. We got Peter Schmuck from the Baltimore Sun, who's at the Cooperstown for the Hall of Fame inductions, coming on at 10 o'clock. But we're gonna talk about the class going in this time, which includes Mike Messina, Mariano Rivera, and others. And at some point, we're probably going to discuss the issue about the guys that are being left out of the Hall of Fame, guys like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. There was an interesting column that I came across on Friday that I want to get into. And, you know, I guess this debate kind of comes up at this time. Maybe not. Maybe it's not the fierce debate that Pete Rose once, well, you know, should Pete Rose. I don't get that sense, but there are still some lingering thoughts that guys like Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and, you know, Roger Clemens, like you said, should be in the Hall of Fame. Certainly a lot of people not in that camp. So we'll come back and talk about that. Plus, I guess Washington, D.C. used to at one point was originally supposed to be, right, the home of the Baseball Hall?
Yes, that is true. Yeah, and yours truly is the only one to uncover that fact.
I did not know that, so we will get the details on that on Hall of Fame Sunday. Yeah, Cooperstown, magical place, no doubt about it. I've got to get to. I have not been there. I'm a bad baseball fan. 45 years old, that's pathetic. Right, PJ? That is pathetic. All right, we'll take a quick time out. It is Tom Lavero. I'm Chris Russell. Good to have you aboard with us. If you want to chime in, 800-636-1067. We're with you on the Fan. Baseball Hall of Fame. I got yelled at one time for calling it the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. Who was the executive director guy? Do you remember of the Baseball Hall? I forgot his name.
Well, they just changed. Now it's a guy named Tim Mead.
Oh, right. Who was with the Angels for a long time. But the former guy, whatever his name was, he yelled at me one time in an interview because I called
it the National Major League Baseball
Hall
of Fame.
I screwed up.
I find it hard to believe that anyone yelled at you, Russell.
You know, believe it or not, it does happen from time to time.
You know, let me just start off by mentioning this story that I unearthed, and no one else has written it. I wrote this in 2012 when I was with the Washington Examiner, and I found it doing some research for something else. I found a little blurb on microfilm about this. According to a September 22, 1922 Associated Press report, baseball planned on building a $100,000 monument to the game in East Potomac Park and a Baseball Hall of Fame to go along with it.
That's pretty incredible.
I mean, really, there's a quote here. They were going to put George Sisler's name. It was a tribute to George Sisler in Congress that they were talking about. And they said, Sizzler's name will be the first inscribed on the $100,000 baseball monument to be erected by the American League in East Potomac Park and presented to the government as a memorial to the national sport and a Hall of Fame for perpetuating the memory of its greatest players. Now, that never came to pass, obviously.
Right.
But, you know, imagine how different things would be if the Hall of Fame was here in Washington, D.C. I know everyone loves it in Cooperstown.
Right.
It's very, you know, it's very quaint. Nostalgic and quaint, and it's a wonderful town. But, I mean, it really, it should have been in Washington.
Yeah, it's weird because I keep saying, I mean, maybe I should stop saying it. Again, 45 years old, I've never been to the Baseball Hall of Fame, but my kids live in Canton.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ohio, home of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And it's just there. It's right off the highway. It's, you know, and not that Canton is a booming metropolis, right? But you almost struggle. Maybe it's because of the pictures and the images in your head of Cooperstown and how that village and how that area comes alive for one weekend a year, for the most part, with so many people flocking. And you talked about, I mean, obviously, with Mariano Rivera going in, Derek Jeter, you know, there's going to be just a swarm of Yankee fans. That's an easy trip.
Yes, right up the freeway.
I almost, like, if it was here in Washington, I mean, for selfish reasons, that would be great, right? I mean, we'd probably be broadcasting from there today.
They'd get more visitors.
Yes.
They would get more visitors if it was in Washington.
But is there something special about, again, a quaint, cozy, intimate atmosphere? I think there still is in today's era of where we build the fanciest and we build the biggest and we build the loudest and the most sophisticated. Right? Is there still something to be said for a place as nostalgic, a place as important, a place as historical, and then match that up in a non-booming metropolis like Washington, D.C. or New York or Chicago or L.A.?
Well, I mean, look, Cooperstown would be quaint without the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Right.
Okay? I mean, that's where the lake is, where actually the Susquehanna River begins. I think the James Fenimore Cooper Museum is up there. There's lots up there besides the Baseball Hall of Fame. Look, I'm not saying it, you know, they should move it or anything like that.
Right.
I just think it would have had a bigger impact if it had been in Washington, D.C. You know what? The Senators might never have left town if the Baseball Hall of Fame was here in Washington, D.C. The profile of baseball would have been a lot bigger. I might want to point out to you, here's another nugget that most people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The Pro Football Hall of Fame was supposed to be in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania. That was part of the whole thing about bringing Jim Thorpe's body to what was a small town in the Poconos called Mock Chunk.
What's the town called?
Mock Chunk.
Oh, Mock Chunk?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they changed the name to Jim Thorpe because they were going to take his body and bury it there and put a memorial to him there. And the old commissioner of the NFL, Burt Bell, the plan was then to locate the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, as part of the whole Jim Thorpe Memorial. Mm-hmm. Well, Burt Bell died of a heart attack at an Eagles game in the late 50s, and then Canton wound up stepping in and winning the rights to host the Football Hall of Fame. So that used to be that was planned to be someplace else as well.
There you go. I mean, again, I made my first trip there in February, I believe it was. And it was just, you know, great, you know, kind of great to tour, you know, all the different things. But I've definitely got to get up to Cooperstown. Here's the one thing that I will say. Every year, and I don't know if this makes me a big baby or not, when I watch even the highlights on MLB Network tonight, if I don't get to see the whole ceremony, because they'll broadcast it starting live at 1:30. But, I mean, it's a lengthy a lengthy process, and obviously,
I think they have five candidates to speak today.
Right.
Roy Halladay, who passed away, obviously, you know, he's being inducted posthumously.
I assume somebody from his family will speak, or you know, maybe his son, who's, I think, a Toronto Blue Jay prospect, if I'm not mistaken. You know, by the time these speeches, I mean, especially a guy like Mariano Rivera. Now, let me just be clear. I'm not a Yankee fan. But something about Mariano Rivera, Tommy, and I know around here there's a lot of reverence for Mike Mussina, and I get it, and I understand that. Maybe not as much reverence because he left Baltimore for the Yankees. That's a whole nother issue. But there's still, I think, a lot of respect and reverence and whatever for Mike Mussina. There is going to be something about Mariano Rivera today, who, you know, by far was the best closer that I've ever seen, right? And statistically the best closer in baseball history,
The first player to be unanimously voted into the Hall.
Mariano Rivera was not a crazy, like, personality by any stretch of the imagination, but when you think of the epitome of dignity and class, a lot of people are going to say it's Derek Jeter and how he did his career with... No. To me, it's Mariano Rivera.
I think you're right. I think you could make that case. I mean, he is. His attraction is his class and dignity.
Yeah.
It really is. That's what makes him so... That's what makes him so popular.
Yeah.
I mean, he just exuded it on the mound. And that people will be emotional about that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he'll be emotional when he's up there.
Yeah.
And it'll be an emotional moment.
What about... We mentioned Halladay. We'll touch on that for a sec, and then we'll get into the Oriole flavor, if you will,
right,
on the other side. You know, I mean, obviously, he gets elected. I'm not going to try and say that word because I butchered it yesterday morning. He gets elected in January, just a couple of months after he passes away.
Right.
That is surreal because when we think of, you know, like Pat Bowlen is going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in a week and a half, right?
Yeah.
He just passed away. But, I mean, he was in his 70s.
Yeah.
This is... Roy freaking Halladay. This guy was a machine for much of my life.
Yeah, he's a multiple Cy Young winner. He's certainly deserving to be in the Hall of Fame, but it's a complicated story because as we've read, he died in a plane crash. Mm-hmm. A plane he was flying. There were drugs in his system, mm-hmm. and there have been stories that have come out since then that have reported that he had a drug addiction problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So... That's a complicated legacy.
But does it take away from that legacy? I don't think it does.
It just adds to the sadness of the final
chapter, right?
It doesn't take away from his baseball legacy. And, you know, far be it from me to criticize anybody who's tortured by demons of drug and alcohol addiction. It's one of the saddest things in the country, and we don't approach it more as much of a sickness as we should. But there'll be some anger left over from people who say, you know, he was a husband, he was a father,
right?
He should have been more responsible. But his baseball legacy, I don't think it takes away from it.
All right, the Moose will be on the loose as well today at the Baseball Hall of Fame. We'll come back, discuss that, and more. Edgar Martinez, Harold Baines, everyone going in to the baseball, one of the larger classes that you have. That is still to come in Cooperstown. Nats, Braves tonight, Sunday night baseball after a big Nationals win. We can come back and discuss that all. Plus, we will get to, again, Peter Schmuck, who's going to join us live from Cooperstown just a couple of hours before the Baseball Hall of Fame ceremony. And should we start to reconsider Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Roger Clemens and all those guys, even though they are certainly eligible in the voting process? PJ Elliott's got the latest sports flash. Along with Tom Libero, I'm Chris Russell. Good to have you with us on a Sunday morning on thefandomradio.com.
Man, that soul, baby.
Oh, yeah. Along with Tom Levero, I'm Chris Russell. Good to have you aboard with us. It is Hall of Fame induction weekend and Sunday at the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Tommy just telling a story how it could have been here in the Washington, D.C. area. Mariano Rivera, Edgar Martinez, Roy Halladay. the late Roy Halladay, and the Moose, Mike Mussina, all voted in and elected, all receiving more than 75% of the vote. Mussina at 76.7%. The Veterans Committee choosing Lee Smith, who struggled to get really a whole lot of traction as one of the dominant closers, but certainly not dominant by today's measure when we look at who also is going in this class, again, in Mariano Rivera, and also Harold Baines. And Tommy, I know you wrote about a column in the Washington Times on Friday about Mike Mussina. And again, I mentioned the split divide, kind of how Oriole fans, you know, we talk about Yankee fans flocking to Cooperstown to honor and celebrate Mariano Rivera. There'll be plenty of Yankee fans there that honor and celebrate Mike Mussina as well. Mike Mussina left from the Baltimore Orioles to the Yankees, and you wrote a column again in the Times and WashingtonTimes.com on Friday about Mussina's kind of twisted and almost, I don't want to call it sad path, but he's in Cooperstown.
Yeah.
It's not a sad path, but could have been with the Orioles that whole time, right? Of that time.
Yeah, I recounted an interview I did with Mussina after he left Baltimore, his first spring training with the Yankees. Mussina won 150 of his 270 games
right.
with Baltimore. Five of the 10 years he was with the Orioles, they had losing records. So that's quite an accomplishment, mm-hmm. what he did.
To win that amount of games.
Right. And then the rest of his career, you know, the 120 after that, he won with the Yankees. He's not a warm and fuzzy guy.
No.
He's not a likable. He's not from a distance a likable guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he could be prickly with electronic media. He liked print media,
mm-hmm.
you know. Sometimes he could be difficult to get along with. Other times he was the most interesting guy you could possibly talk to.
It's interesting that you say he liked print media. He didn't like electronic media. I think a lot of athletes are weird like that. Probably because a guy like Mussina, who I did not know in any way, shape, or form, just knew him from watching him on television, being a fan of baseball, and watching his entire career. You know, I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, the reasoning for that is because a guy like Mussina, probably, who played during much of the quote-unquote sports talk radio and guy talk and whatever that this station has become and what many sports, probably looks at that and said, that's not the way we should be covering the game. We shouldn't be killing players and managers for every little move and whatever. And he respected you guys in the print media more because you guys had a certain art, a certain craft, a certain way of going about the analysis of the game, right?
Well, one thing, he's a Stanford guy. He's
right.
Very smart.
That's true.
Okay, I think you're going to see him in the future play a big role
mm-hmm.
in the players' union. Moving forward.
Okay.
And let me just put this aside. Despite what I said about the electronic media,
mm-hmm.
his favorite reporter and the reporter he was closest to was Craig Heist.
Yeah.
Heist and him have a close.
I know.
When Heist was in the hospital, during spring training after he flew out of a convertible car in an accident. In Fort Lauderdale, Mussina called him on the phone.
Yeah.
So Mussina and I, so let me just put that.
Is Heist even there? Do we know?
No, he's not there.
I haven't checked. He's
not there. I talked to him about it.
Okay.
But yeah, Mussina was, he was the guy doing the New York Times crossword puzzle every day.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of guy. So when I interviewed him at Yankees camp, he talked about how he would have liked to have stayed in Baltimore and possibly wound up breaking Jim Palmer's career
mm-hmm.
Pitching records with the Orioles and be the greatest pitcher in franchise history. And he had a shot to do that. I mean, I think Palmer has what, 250, 260 career wins. Now, Palmer has like three Cy Youngs.
Right.
And Mussina didn't have any. But Mussina talked about that, and he thought he would have had a chance.
268.
Yeah. So right two behind Mussina, who wound up winning 20 games for the only time in his career mm-hmm. in his last year.
Yep.
But Mussina talked about how the Orioles basically ignored him when it came time for his contract going into free agency, didn't call him, didn't set up a negotiation, didn't do anything. basically Messina said we had to call them for a meeting. Meanwhile, the Yankees did all they could to woo Messina. Joe Torre was on the phone with them all the time. Teammates, Yankee players were on
because
the phone
they went
with him.
Against him for so many years.
And Messina talked about how, you know, if you measured who wanted me more, the Orioles or the Yankees, it wasn't even close.
Right. Right.
Now the money obviously came into play.
Right.
But I think that's really the turning point at the end of the 98 season. It's the end of the 2000 season.
Right. Because he was, so we should know season. That records don't exactly define a pitcher. But if we're going to talk about 270 wins being the legacy and the greatness of Mike Mussina, and there's no doubt that he is, that final year in Baltimore, I had to look this up in 2000, he was 11-15 with a 3.79 ERA, which 3.79 ERA by today's standards, Tommy, is pretty damn good.
I might want to point out that was a losing team, too.
Right. But what I'm saying is I wonder how much of that triggers in the Orioles' mind and the and Angelos' mind. Wait a second. Why do I need this guy when he's 11-15? If he was that damn good, he would be 15-11 with a losing team.
But that's stupid.
Of course, that I'm setting you up for the fastball here, Tommy. I'm grooving a fastball.
I think it was that year.
Do you see where I'm getting at? That might be the mentality of a guy who says, well, why am I going to pay Mike Mussina whatever he got with the Yankees? I don't even remember what the contract was.
It's too early for me to start drinking. So I can't get into Peter Angelo's mind unless I've had at least two.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Six packs. So I have no idea what he was thinking. It's not possible.
What's the Tommy Lavero beer of choice these days?
It's not... Actually,
it used to be Yingling, right?
Yeah, no, but not anymore. Not anymore. I'm not a Yingling fan.
Oh, okay.
It varies. It's beer's beer. I'm not a craft beer guy.
Okay.
I mean, I don't have to.
Rolling Rock's from Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah, but Rolling Rock stopped being Rolling Rock when some Belgium company bought it.
Okay. So yeah, I haven't had a Rolling Rock in a while.
Yeah. So look. So yeah, Messina wound up going to the Yankees. I think he meant more the Orioles fans because To fall in love with Messina was to fall in love with him on the mound.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't like Rivera. He wasn't a warm and fuzzy guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think he means as much to Yankee fans as he did to Orioles fans. But, you know, Messina being a smart guy took the right road and said, I'm not going to pick either cap for my plaque. I'm just going to go in without a team logo on my cap, which actually Roy Halladay's family did that too because he was great in Toronto,
sure, and
great
Philadelphia
as well.
I mean, a lot of these players have these split divide
yes.
loyalties, and they don't want to offend either. So, like the Orioles, as far as Mussina's relationship with the Orioles organization right now, it's not bad. It's not like who's the wide receiver in Detroit that was so good, Calvin. Calvin Johnson, Megatron, who like hates the Detroit Lions.
Yeah,
but
time heals all.
Right.
I mean, it's been a long time since Messina pitched in Baltimore. Peter Angelos is not involved in the operation anymore. The Suns, one of the things the Suns that have done right is reach out to a lot of their older players.
Okay.
Messina threw out the first pitch at Camden Yards a couple weeks ago. So, look, I think he's a Hall of Famer. I'm shocked that he got in as quickly as he did. I thought he'd have a much harder road to hoe to get in. He's the best pitcher I've ever seen day in and day out. Max Scherzer is coming close to that, but watching Messina pitch was a privilege.
But also a very different style pitcher, obviously. Messina, correct me if I'm wrong real quickly because we're late here. Messina not the same type of pitcher, but if you like drew up like a mental image of Mussina, he's much more like Greg Maddux as opposed to Max Scherzer in terms of
control,
painting the corners,
command,
location,
knuckle curve.
Right.
He put the ball where he wanted it.
Right.
Yeah.
And didn't have the explosive dominant stuff that so many other great ones have, but pitched with a craft, pitched with a purpose.
And did it during the height of the steroid era in the DH American League.
He got 76.7% of the vote. As you know, you need 75% of the vote. Roy Halladay, 85.5%. Edgar Martinez, the same, 85.4% actually. And of course, as Tommy mentioned earlier, Mariano Rivera with the perfect 100%. When we return, is Harold Baines, who is also getting elected, is he deserving? As well, we'll start to make our way into the Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens conversation as we make the turn towards 10 o'clock. Peter Schmuck will join us from the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown just after 10 o'clock right here on The Fan and the Radio.com. I don't mind Jessica Mendoza. Vescursion annoys me. I don't really pick apart broadcast teams that much. I find it amazing how A-Rod was like the scorn of the earth a couple of years ago and is now everybody's the apple of everybody's eye. And he says absolutely nothing of any consequence.
It's the greatest, one of the greatest resurrections we've seen of our time.
It is.
But guys like A-Rod, they screw up somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
It's in their DNA.
Yeah. So A-Rod.
A-Rod will do something to step on it at some point.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth, so I'm not going to. Is there any chance A-Rod ever gets into the Hall of Fame?
I don't think so. Being a multiple time admitted PED user.
Right.
But I might want to point out that in 2022, the Hall of Fame is heading for a nuclear meltdown. I think that's the last year, that Bonds and Clemens are eligible.
Right.
Now, they might squeeze in before then. They've got 3 years left.
Right. They've got about 59 and change percent of the vote.
Right. And they're fortunate because once you get past Derek Jeter next year, for a couple of years, there's not a lot of obvious candidates.
Which is going to boost naturally their count.
Right. So they may manage to slip in. But if they're not in by their last year, 2022, that's A-Rod's first year on the ballot as well. So you'll have A-Rod, Bonds, and Clemens all on the ballot at the same time. That will cause
in that final year
of Bonds
that they're
eligible. That's first,
it's A-Rod's first year. Could you imagine
eligible.
A Hall, yeah, like you said, a Hall of Fame class in 2022? Yeah. Of Bonds, Clemens, and A-Rod.
Well, I can tell you what 2023 would look like.
I mean, there's no way the baseball writers would ever allow that, right?
And it's not capable. It's a holy war among baseball writers. You said, I mean, it's not as controversial among Pete Rose. It's literally like sitting on the OJ jury these days voting for the Hall of Fame when it comes to steroids. And there's a lot of division among baseball writers, some of whom are boycotting voting for the Hall of Fame because their fellow writers aren't voting for Bonds and Clemens. It's become absurd. But I can tell you what 2023 induction ceremonies would look like if those three guys got in 2022. A lot of empty chairs on the stage.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of Hall of Famers who won't show up. If either Bonds or Clemens, there are Hall of Famers, not a lot.
Right.
I'll say there are Hall of Famers who will not show up if either Bonds or Clemens are inducted.
Well,
if all three of them are inducted at the same time,
right,
they'll stay away in mass.
I mean, it's got to be mass anarchy there. If that, now, I would assume if a guy like Clemens goes in, all of his former Yankee teammates, by that time, Jeter will be in. Again, Mariano goes in today. Mike Mussina goes. I assume all those guys will be there because, to my knowledge, I don't remember Roger Clemens being like this enemy of the state of his clubhouse.
No. It's funny because Clemens was one of the most hated guys in baseball.
Right.
Okay, for years. And at the end of his career, he managed to repair that image in New York.
Right.
No, in New York, he managed to change the whole image of himself. And among Yankee teammates, he was not disliked. But among players in the game before he went to the Yankees, one of the most hated guys in all baseball.
And because he was so intense, because he was so, I want to say, vindictive. I mean, look at the whole, and this came with the Yankees. Look at the whole him and Piazza thing, which led to that big blow up in game two of the World Series. Tell me, I wanted to ask you this real quickly before the top of the hour. Is it wrong, like, the way I kind of look at it, and again, I am not a Hall of Fame voter. I know, you know, I'll leave reverence or deference to you guys, you know, who have done this and who do it. I'm just talking about it for me. I looked at Barry Bonds as a Hall of Fame baseball player before we think he started using steroids and performance-enhancing drugs with the whole Balco situation and all of the timeline and going to San Francisco and all that. So I think he was a Hall of Fame player before that point. Roger Clemens, I could be wrong on this. I'll double-check the timeline. He turned around, not turned around his career.
Oh, he saved his career in Toronto.
In Toronto. I think that's about the time, if I remember correctly, based on the Mitchell report and all the different reporting, that he was thought to and started using before.
Yes.
To me, I don't know if Roger Clemens was a Hall of Famer in Boston, meaning before, as good as he was at times, I don't think he was a Hall of Famer before he went to Toronto and, like you said, resurrected his career. Whereas Bonds, if we use the timeline of when he went out to San Francisco around that time, I think he was a Hall of Famer already.
Yeah, I know that, but that makes what he does even more egregious.
Of course.
Look it. Barry Bonds admitted using steroids. He admitted to using the cream and the clear in grand jury testimony in a Balco case.
Unknowingly, well, but Tommy, he had no idea.
Yeah, I know that. No one believes that. And you know, he actually, federal prosecutors indicted him on perjury charges.
Right.
And he wound up being convicted on obstruction of justice charges that a judge threw out later on. But look, he's an admitted user of the cream and the clear. Steroids were illegal in baseball, and they have been since 1991.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't start testing until, I think, 2004.
Right.
But that doesn't mean they weren't illegal. They were banned. In baseball, you weren't allowed to take them. So, so to me, Bonds doesn't get in. I don't vote for Bonds. I don't vote for Clemens. I didn't vote for Palmeiro. I didn't vote for McGuire. I don't vote for Sosa. And I'm not going to vote for A-Rod. None of those guys get in. Now, I think there's a chance, like I said, that Bonds and Clemens may slip in, because I think there's enough writers that are going to vote for them and let them in. And if they do, that's fine. Then they're in. I'm not going to treat it like it's some kind of like a grave injustice that they get into the Hall of Fame. But they don't get my vote.
All right. If you want to weigh in on this, 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067 on the Hadid Carpet Cleaning listener lines. We're hoping to catch up with Peter Schmuck from the Baseball Hall of Fame coming up in just a couple of moments. PJ Elliott's got the top of the hour sports flash. And then we'll get into some Redskins next hour as well, as training camp is here. The boys report to Richmond on Wednesday, baby. It's time to get it going for the NFL season on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.